The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Good afternoon, Arizona. This actually is not Seth Leibson. And if you listen to this show often, you didn't need to know that. You knew that already. But my name is John Campbell, Congressman John Campbell, to be specific. And so you're thinking, Congressman John Campbell, I'm thinking of the 9 Congress members in Arizona. There's no John Campbell. There never was a John Campbell. That's correct. I was a congressman from California, and I say was because I retired, chose not to run for re-election 4 years ago, just about exactly 4 years ago. So I've been out of Congress for 4 years. But if my voice sounds familiar to you, there is a reason for that. I have been a guest on Hugh Hewitt's show ever since his very first show in 2000. I was a guest for him during his actual very first week on radio. And then between, 2010 and 2014, I was guest hosted his show multiple times during the year. But now, as you probably know, Hugh Hewitt is on in the morning drive Eastern time, which is a little difficult to do from Arizona. But we are going to talk about so many things today. So if you're a regular Seth listener, you're probably thinking, I don't know who this guy is, et cetera, et cetera. But don't leave. We're going to talk about the shutdown. I'll give you some of my experience. We're going to do that very soon here. My experience with 2013, I was there for all the Obama shutdowns. And what I saw and what I think might be, what the options are, where I think we might be headed here. The Governor Ducey gave his State of the State address yesterday. We are going to parse through that, talk about what that is, talk about the Democrats' response to it, talk about a lot of things. And we have a whole bunch of other things. I mean, everything from, this is Car Week in Scottsdale, and I'm a car collector, and we're going to talk a little bit about that, but also even about an experiment I did, the difference between a McDonald's Quarter Pounder in the Phoenix area and in the Los Angeles area, and the difference in price and why. So hang around because you're going to want to know all these things. But first, let me give you a little bit of a bio on me, on John Campbell. Who is this guy? And why am I all of a sudden appearing here as the guest host for Seth, who, by the way, will be back with you tomorrow? Well, I was born and raised in Los Angeles. I have a degree in economics from UCLA. And a master's degree in business taxation from the University of Southern California. So all you ASU and Arizona people can boo at me now and talk about whatever you want to talk about. That's fine. I've actually, frankly, have distanced myself from both of those institutions largely for political reasons, but that's a story for another day. I'm a CPA, still am a CPA, technically still qualified to practice, although I haven't actually signed anybody's tax return or done an audit in a number of decades. I spent about 20 plus years in business as a car dealer. And before I lost my mind and went into politics, my opening joke, I really shouldn't be saying this on the air because I still give quite a number of speeches. And when they give my bio and they say, he was a CPA and then he became a car dealer and blah, 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 I stand up and I always say this same thing, and it never fails to give a laugh. And by the way, for any of you who give speeches and you give jokes that are supposed to be a joke and they get no laugh, there's almost no worse feeling. But I always say that I started out life in a very trusted and respected profession as a CPA. And then I became a car dealer, and then I went into politics. The only way I can go down from here is to go to law school. You can all laugh now. I can hear it. I can hear you laughing. You're in your car. You're at the office, whatever. You're laughing. I can hear it. Anyway, I served for just short of 5 years in the California State Legislature, both in the lower house, which there is known as the Assembly, and in the Senate. And then I was in Congress serving a part of Orange County, 2 different districts, because I went through redistricting, 2 different districts over my nearly 10 years, 5 terms, in in Congress representing California. And then for various reasons, including the atmosphere, which we all know of that's there now, and the difficulty, frankly, of serving in Congress when you come back to your home almost every weekend, as I did, for various reasons, I elected not to run for reelection. And now, what am I doing here in Arizona? I call myself a California political refugee. And you will hear, so I now, although I still have a house in California because I have almost all of my family is there. Most of them are listening right now online. But I live, my wife and I, Captivating Mrs. Campbell. We will celebrate our 40th wedding anniversary this year. And we now live in Scottsdale, and we are political refugees from California. I will make various references to California today, and I understand that you are all listening in Arizona and in the greater Phoenix metro area and not in California. But the reason is I often have learned more in my life from the people who failed than from the people I knew who succeeded. I learned so much what as much, I would say, if not more, on what not to do so I don't turn out like him than to learn what I should do so I do turn out like her. And so it is not with relish that I bring up California, but merely as a cautionary tale. One of my great passions living here in Arizona now is to try and do my part to see that Arizona does not go the way that California did. And we'll talk a little bit about that a little more later. But there is my basic short bio, by the way, 602-508-0960 connects you with Congressman John Campbell on the Seth Leibson Show. Again, that's 602-508-0960 if you wish to talk with me about whatever we're going to talk about at any particular time. But let's now get to the shutdown. It's still going on. Guess what? There's lots of news today. Prime Minister May's Brexit vote went down 432 to 202. Ouch. And Netflix raised its prices from $11 to $13. Ouch. But we're going to talk about those things later. But the other big news, is it big news? I don't know. Guess what? Shutdown's still going on. Guess what? The president made a proposal to moderate Democrats, said, hey, come to the White House. Let's talk. They turned him down. I understand why they did. Had they gone, even if they wanted to go, even if they wanted to talk, the left wing of their party would be unleashed upon them, and they would be merciless. They would be brutal. So I understand why they didn't go. It's unfortunate that that is the way politics is today. It's another issue we're going to get to later in the show. My experience at a bar in Scottsdale with a couple of lefties. We'll get to that. But back to the shutdown. In 2013, there's one major difference that I want to point out to you between the shutdown in 2013, the Obama shutdown, and the one now under Trump. Obama wanted to inflict maximum pain. He felt, and he wound up being right, that Republicans would cave, that we would fold our tents if the pain was great enough and enough people called offices and said, you've got to stop this. Give in to the president, whatever, you've got to stop this. And that is, in fact, what happened. And I will discuss in a minute, tell you exactly what happened on that in 2013 and why we caved and what happened. But he said maximum pain. So what an example of that was, I lived in Alexandria, Virginia when I was there, and the George Washington Parkway, and you know D.C., is the road that goes along the Potomac on the Virginia side. And that parkway and the grassy area between the road and the Potomac River is actually a national park. Now, there's no fence around it. There's no gates around it. There's no anything. It just has little places you pull into park and you can get out, and there's some parking benches. And it goes on for like 20 miles, 30 miles, you know, along the Potomac there. It's not manned, not gated, not anything. You know, it's just grass up against the river and places you could sit. Well, what Obama did, and remember, why is the shutdown cause problems? Because people are laid off and they're not working. And so they say you can't go to the national parks because there's nobody there to man it. Well, what Obama did was to make the pain so bad, they hired people, they added people to close the grass area between the Potomac and the George Washington Parkway. They coned off the parking spaces, which were not fenced off. Again, no fences, no gates, no guards, no men, no people there at all. But they manned it so you couldn't. And I, because I'm me, and it really ticked me off that Obama was doing this, I moved the cones and decided to park in there. And a park ranger came up, said, "You can't do that. Park is closed. You can't go in." And I said, "But when it's open, there's nobody here. It is no different. Why can't we go?" But what you find is Trump, and I know this from inside the administration, actually gave the opposite direction to the Park Service and to all the other offices. And he said, look, he says, "I want minimum pain here. Leave everything open you can. If it's not manned now and nobody's there guarding it, don't guard it. Don't cover it up. Don't keep people out." Does that tell you a little something about the difference between Obama and the difference between President Trump? One said, hurt the people as much as you can. The other said, hurt them as little as you can. But they both wanted what they wanted out of the shutdown. We'll talk more about that as we come back after the break. It's Congressman John Campbell filling in on the Seth Leibson Show. We will be right back. Don't you dare go anywhere. Welcome back. It's Congressman John Campbell filling in for Seth today. Okay, producer Bill, what music is that? We're using, the only thing I'm more opinionated about than politics is music. So I'm going with Seth's music, which is a huge risk for me. And I told him yesterday, I said, if I think your music is garbage, I'm going to say it's garbage. What was that? Oh my God, I love Jimmy Buffett. Oh, play it. Can we bring it back up? Oh, of course. I just didn't. I've been to 3 Jimmy Buffett concerts. Captivating Mrs. Campbell and I are total parrot heads. I even have an actual hat. We both do. She's listening to this now and she's saying, don't tell them, don't tell them. Because we have actual hats with gigantic parrots on top. Okay. All right. I got to tell Seth, I give him thumbs up on that one. Okay. We'll get back to some, we'll see what happens at the next music break. Thank you, producer Bill. But back to the shutdown. So 2013 shutdown. And by the way, I was in Congress from 2005 to 2015. So, and I came in a special election. So I was there just short of 10 years. But so in 2013, President Obama inflicted maximum pain, and that was what he instructed people. If you have to spend more money, hire more people to make it more inconvenient, do it. I don't know how you do that in the executive branch since you supposedly can't hire people. So I kept asking people, how can he do this? How can he put people in a park that doesn't normally have anybody there in order to stand there and keep people out? I don't get it. But in any event, understand first how the government is funded. There are 12 appropriations bills. Appropriations, nice big word, like is often used in Congress to make things sound more important than they really are. But the government's funded over 12 different separate appropriations bills. Each one is a different area of the government. For example, defense is one. Another one is veterans and military construction. Another one is the legislative branch, et cetera, et cetera. So you have these different bills of the government, 12 of them. During that 2013 shutdown, none had been passed. So all 12 appropriations bills had not been passed. So therefore, it was a full government shutdown, meaning that no part of the government was open or being paid at all. What we have today is a partial government shutdown because they already passed and signed, and the president signed, 7 of those 12 bills. So that's why you're not hearing anything about defense. You're not hearing anything about the military not being paid. Is because the defense appropriations bill was passed by both houses and signed by the president prior to this. So you have 5 of the 12 appropriations bills that have not been funded. So that's why it's a partial shutdown this time, which means the impacts of it are less than they were when all 12 are shut down. So in 2013, I mentioned before the break that we Republicans basically gave in. And this fight was over spending in general. The president wanted to spend more money. We wanted to spend less. We Republicans wanted to spend less. We had the House and the Senate back then. And and we wanted to spend less, and we were holding it up to spend less. And I remember it like it was yesterday. You have caucuses, and the caucuses meet in a basement room in the Capitol building down underneath HR1, I think it was called, HC1. And you meet down in the basement of the Capitol building. And down there we had this caucus meeting, and we'd been, I think it was 17 days that shutdown lasted. And we were there 7 days a week. You didn't go home on weekends. We had sessions. They gave us Sunday mornings off, but we had sessions Sunday afternoon. And we were always meeting, you know, to show we were working, whatever, to try and get the shutdown, to try and come up with a solution. But the president thought, President Obama at that time, thought that he could get us to give in, and he was right. And what made it happen was, I will never forget it, that in a caucus meeting, a member of Congress, I don't remember what district he represented. I think it was in Georgia. It was somewhere in the South. It was she. And she came in and told this story. And she said, I just heard from the wife of a soldier in Afghanistan. And she said, my husband is over there, and we're about not to get paid. And we live paycheck to paycheck. And we have three kids, and they're in school. And if we don't pay our rent, we're going to get thrown out. And my husband is over there in Afghanistan risking his life for this country, and he's not going to get a paycheck. And if he doesn't, his wife and children will not have a place to live. And I tell you, when this member of Congress brought that in, and she basically said, I'm voting for the spending the president wants because we can't let this continue. Several others got up and told similar stories, and they were all about the military. And they were all about the military not getting paid and what was going to happen. And so we caved. We gave in. And President Obama basically got the spending that he wanted. And supposedly, we Republicans were blamed for that shutdown. But remember, that was in 2013. It was in October of 2013. And 2014 was a big Republican year. It was a year where won a lot of seats. So don't always equate who gets blamed for the shutdown with the idea that that means things are going to go badly for them in the next election. A lot will have to do with how much time there is between now and the next election. So let's turn to this shutdown now. Let's talk about why might it end? How could it end? Who might surrender? Who might cave? Who might give in? I mean, the president wants his $5 billion wall. He's made a whole bunch of compromises already. He's offered various things. He's a deal maker. We all know that. We all know that. But the Democrats on their side have offered nothing in return except what we want, which I experienced with Democrats before. I shouldn't go down too many rabbit holes, but one of the things I negotiated with the Obama administration, I'll never forget, they came in and they just said, well, we want what we want. And I said, okay, I'll give you that. You give me this. And they said, well, we don't want that. And I said, I know you don't want that, but I don't want what you have. So if you get what you want and I don't, I get something I want and you don't. Well, no, we don't see it that way. We just want what we want. Well, okay, well, then there's no deal. And guess what? I didn't make a deal. And this was a thing over funding for the IMF, International Monetary Fund. We didn't make a deal. The U.S. didn't fund it. Great, but we didn't get, which I was fine. That's what I wanted. But we didn't get something else. We would have given it up for some other things. We didn't get it. Democrats are doing this again. They're basically saying, we know what you want, Mr. President. You can't have it. We want everything we want. You don't get what you want. That's the deal. No, no, that is not a deal. That is not the way deals work. And so, so what's one scenario that could happen? The president caves. Do you think that's going to happen? Do you think this president, the way he is, the way he talks, the way he's everything, that he's going to give in to them? I don't. I tell you what, I just don't. You know, there's a lot of things about President Trump I like, a lot of things I don't like. But one of the things I think is his strongest attribute as president representing us is his courage. This guy is fearless. He is not afraid of anybody or anything. He says what he believes is right. He does what he believes is right, and he will take the arrows. I don't think this president's going to cave. And Mitch McConnell, Mitch McConnell, who I know a lot of conservatives have thought, oh, you know, he's a squishy moderate. My gosh, this guy has been the best Senate majority leader of my lifetime on these confirmations of Supreme Court justices. And on this, he says, I'm not bringing a bill up to the Senate unless the president's going to sign it. Not going to bring it up, which empowers Trump to stand firm. If the Senate was going to cave and send a bill and put it on his desk, that's tougher for the president to do. But McConnell saying, I won't take it up till the president says he's going to sign it. Good for him. I don't think the president's going to cave. So what happens from here? We'll talk about that soon. So don't you go away, America. John Campbell filling in for Seth Leibson. Welcome back, Arizona. Congressman John Campbell filling in for Seth Leibson today. And this is that time of the day when we talk all things financial with John Dombrowski of Grand Canyon Planning Associates. Welcome to the show, John.
Welcome. Thank you. Nice to have you as well.
Thank you. And good to meet you on the phone.
Yes.
So it is after the first of the year, and soon people will be getting their W-2s, their 1099s. There's a new tax law in town that was passed by Congress and signed by the president in that took effect first full year in 2018. And the legislature in Arizona hasn't conformed, might conform. Whole lot of people are sitting here saying it's tax time. What's going to happen? And the government shut down. Does include the IRS? Does it not? Are they going to will they even look at my tax return? Will I get a refund? So many questions, John Dombrowski. Clear them up for everybody.
Oh, my gosh. I just quit. I just give up right now. Well, first of all, I'm not a tax advisor. However, I'm a financial advisor. But I do like to talk regarding these matters with my clients, because those are the questions that I'll get from them as they start to get, as you mentioned, those W-2s, those 1099s, those K-1s, and other related tax documents. And they're going to need all of those things so that they can file to get their refund if they're going to be due a refund, or if they need to maybe pay taxes, right? Because a lot of folks may not pay enough in quarterly estimated taxes, and they may owe dollars at the end of the year. And this is going to be, again, a reason for them to make sure they have all these documents correct and file them on time so that they get those payments in. But with that being said, one of the questions that I'm getting asked, and you just brought up the government shutdown, we heard that even though the government shut down, people are going to get their tax refunds. Well, if the government remains shut down, I don't know, and I don't think anyone really can answer whether or not that's going to happen. I would hope that we can come to some type of a resolution here, but I was listening to you a little bit, and as you know, the president, he's pretty sticks to his guns, and he's talking about that this can go on for some time, this shutdown.
Oh, yeah.
And if that's the case, there may be some people out there that may not get the refund. You still have to file your taxes, folks. Don't miss the deadlines that are important for you, especially if you owe taxes, right? We don't want to be stuck not paying those quarterly estimated taxes, as well as any taxes we will owe on our April 15th filing deadline. So that's critical for folks to be doing that. So what's going to happen? Boy, I'll tell you, I just don't know. But I just say we need to, as citizens, need to do what we do every year, which is file our taxes. And we're just going to have to wait for our refund, possibly. But we will definitely have to pay our taxes that are due on time.
Okay, yeah. Right now, I don't see the shutdown ending soon. Now, will it end before April 15th? Probably, but can't even count on that. I mean, right. You know, who knows at this point. But, okay, that is good advice for people. Let me bring up another thing with you, not specifically related to, let's call them marketable securities investments, but this is Car Week in Scottsdale.
And, oh, my. Yes, it is.
Yes, and a lot of people know it as Barrett Jackson, but there's actually they were the first and started this, but there's actually seven auctions. Last year, those seven auctions had sales of $252 million.
Yes,
and just here in Scottsdale in a 10-day period, and sold over 3,500 cars. A lot of the people buying those cars, they're buying collectibles. They're thinking, I bet I can make money on this someday, and that sort of thing. When clients come to you and they talk about collectibles, not necessarily cars, coins, paintings, whatever, How do you talk to them about that? What questions do you get asked?
Sure. So if we'll use cars as an example, since you brought up the auctions that are in town right now, there might be a lot of car enthusiasts out there versus a car collector or someone that actually buys and sells cars for a living. And that's going to be a whole different ballgame, right? Someone who's an enthusiast goes out and gets caught up in the aura of this auction, and they buy a car that they've always wanted, a 76 Mustang or whatever they buy.
Okay, yeah, you just described me, except okay. It was a 66 Mustang.
66.
But go on.
But they love it, right? And they buy this car for whatever it is, $50,000. And maybe they tweak it a little bit and they do some things. And over the years, they sell that car for $55,000. Well, any gain in that type of an asset is considered a capital asset. Again, I'm not a tax advisor, but there could potentially be a gain there. And you may have to pay some capital gain type of a tax. But if you're a collector and you're buying and selling cars as a business, well, it's a whole different ballgame here. Now it's like any other business when you're making a profit, whether you sell insurance or whether you sell cars or whether you sell widgets, you're going to pay potentially ordinary income tax on that. So you need to talk to your tax advisor if that's something you're considering doing.
Okay, yeah. And actually, the tax on collectibles is higher than that. I am a CPA
right,
and a tax guy. And so the tax on collectibles is 5% higher, federal tax.
There you go.
Than it is on stocks and bonds and so forth. John Dombrowski,
yes.
Tell people where they can get a hold of you at Grand Canyon Planning Associates.
You bet. Grand Canyon Planning Associates, 480-991-1055. Check out our website, Grand Canyon Planning. Securities and advisory services offered through Client One Securities LLC, a member of FINRA and SIPC, and an investment advisor. Grand Canyon Planning Associates LLC and Client One Securities LLC are not affiliated. Thanks so much.
You missed your calling, John Dombrowski. You do that so fast. You should be at one of those auctions right now.
Right now.
Stay with us. Thank you. Stay with us, Phoenix. This is John Campbell filling in for Seth Leibson. No, producer Bill, I know this song. I know this classic rock. I'm older than Seth. I had played this stuff on records. Oh, who? Hi, everybody. Hello again, Arizona. It is Congressman John Campbell filling in for Seth Leibson. And we're talking about the shutdown right now. We're going to go back and talk about the shutdown. But we're also going to talk with Doug from Maricopa here. Now, hold on, Doug. I'm coming to you. But I need to push this button, and I put the microphone in the wrong place. So I have to go over here and have I got you, Doug? You there?
Yeah, you do. I am actually so relieved, Representative Campbell, that there was finally a slight technical error on your side. Ordinarily, over the years when I call in, I will often put my phone on mute while I work in my studio. I'm a professional artist. So there has been more than once, twice, maybe a dozen times that Seth comes back on and I begin to talk and there's nothing but radio silence. So it didn't happen today, and I'm glad you had a slight technical glitch on your side, so I'm not alone.
There you go. What's on your mind?
Well, the reason I was calling is I've always been a big fan of yours. You're one of the good guys.
Oh, well, thank you.
And I listened to you a couple of times when you did the Hugh Hewitt show. But in looking to this, I was thinking over history. The Republicans have always approached things as trying to get compromise and getting along. That's the older establishment of, you know, I think you were in that vein, in that we viewed negotiating that everything's a compromise and get along. But just like with the economics, where everything is free markets, it worked in theory, but now we have 25 years to look back and say, hey, it caused a side effect of lost industry. We can look at 25 years of that more moderate, nice approach, and we can say the government grew, taxes.
Okay. All right. I get
regulations
you.
Regulations grew. So I think that explains Trump. A lot of us said, okay, that niceness has been tried. Now let's try a firmer hand.
Right.
And so I'm looking at that, and how do you think that's going to play during the shutdown? Because most of us do want someone to finally put their foot down, rather than the history of what you were talking about, and apologizing for us daring to question Democrats.
Right. Okay. Well, you're kind of feeding. See, I set you up. Perfect. You're kind of feeding into what I'm.
You're a genius.
Yeah. To what I'm getting to here, because, yeah. All right. So, like you said, one option. You know, and Trump will make a deal. Do you think he shouldn't? Now, let's describe what the deal is. One of the things we heard about today, I think it was, or maybe late yesterday, is Rob Portman's proposed compromise. And this is one that's been out there floating, but he's being formal about it. You give us our $5 billion, or maybe it's more than that. I don't know. But you give us the wall, we'll give you DACA. And a lot of the feeling on that, in Washington at least, is that if you do that, that might cause a rift within the House Democrats, where the House Hispanic caucus that really, really wants DACA says, whoa, wait. This is something we've wanted for years. We didn't get with Obama, and now maybe we could get that now. Okay, put the wall in, whatever, that's fine. But we care more about the people that are here than the people who might come. And so go ahead and put up the wall. But let's get our DACA, and that maybe that splits, because the in politics as in war, often the best way to defeat your enemy is to divide them. So what do you think about that?
I think you're 100% correct and very insightful on that. But I would say two things to that, and I'd love to hear your answer to this. But basically, I would like to know how we define negotiating, because in the past, historically, our idea of compromise is the Democrats say we want to expand government 8 or 9%, and we want to say, oh, let's expand it 3 or 4%, and our idea of compromising is we're going to expand it 7%. Just happened to be 3 or 4% faster than inflation.
No question.
So then the question is, really, it never, ever has been where they compromised to a decline of spending. It's always a slightly slower, rapid growth. So it's still going the wrong direction. So, A, how do we define compromise? I think we should, but we should gain something. Secondly, you know, the Democrats have lied, and the gutless Republicans have never enforced it. When they said Reagan had the compromise in immigration in the 80s, we got the amnesty, and we got no border enforcement. With George H.W. Bush, we were going to get the tax, increased taxes, but then we were going to have government cuts. We never get the government cuts, and the Republicans never enforce it.
Right. No, I get it. Okay, Doug, I get it. I understand. And I see where you're at on that. But I think, like you say, this is a different president. This is a different situation. I think there will likely be a different result. And as I'm going to discuss here in a minute, I think it's much more likely. I don't think president's going to give in. I don't think he's going to give the Democrats what they want. He'll make a deal, but he's not going to cave. He's not going to collapse. But I think there's a chance, I think the greater chance is that the Democrats are going to have to give in from their current position and make a deal. Thanks so much for the call, Doug. I want to go over this with everybody. I'm sure we'll talk again. Thanks. Oh, I see. I leaned over to turn it. Oh, he hung up before I had the chance to hang it up. Anyway, okay. Back to this. So, because look, here's what happens. There's moderate Republicans, because always what happens, it's what happened in 2013. As I recall, I actually didn't vote for that deal, because I've been a huge budget hawk my whole 14 years in full-time elected public office, and I think I didn't vote for it. But the moderate Republicans in the Senate, if they want to do something, but the president says he's not going to sign it, McConnell won't take it up. If moderate Republicans in the House decide they'll work with the Democrats to pass something in the House, but the president says he's not going to sign it, McConnell won't take it up. And so it'll just die in between the House and the Senate. This is why what McConnell is doing, backing up the president on this, is so important. And for any of you who think that Mitch McConnell is not standing up like no House majority leader ever has in my lifetime, look at things like this, because he is. Okay, so now what could happen on the other side? There's a Portman compromise, DACA for the wall, and the House Hispanic caucus breaks. And they now... One thing, the majority has the rules, and even if the House Hispanic caucus says we'll break, we'll vote with Republicans, and we'll pass something that then the Senate will pass, the president will sign, unless Pelosi allows it on the floor, then it won't get a vote. So it's always up to the Speaker whether to allow it on the floor or not. So, but there's any number of scenarios here where some kind of a deal happens. And realize what's happening here. I told the story about military members' spouses. basically breaking the back of the Republican caucus, telling about their pain and so forth that was happening from the shutdown. Think what's happening now. Somebody working for the EPA, somebody working for the IRS, somebody working for the Treasury Department. These are largely Democrats' constituents. They're calling those Democratic offices and they're saying, do something. Give him his stupid wall. I want to get paid. This is hurting me. You got to help me. I think the pressure is going to be on them. And I think rather than in the past where we've seen Republican members going to their leadership saying, you got to do something. This is killing me at home. I think you may start to see Democratic members going and saying, you got to do something. This is killing me at home. Now, there's only so long they can say, I know they're saying, well, it's Trump's fault. You know, Trump's got to do it. But eventually people, I've experienced this myself, they say, you're my congressman. He's not. You got to stand up for me. So we shall see. Time will tell where this goes. A little more about the shutdown when we come back. Don't go away, Arizona. Congressman John Campbell filling in for Seth Leibson on The Seth Leibson Show. Welcome back, Arizona. It is Congressman John. Oh, keep the music up there, producer, producer Bill. Go ahead and keep that music up. Yeah, there we go. See, you know, Seth, you were listening a little while ago. Pretty good music. I actually give a thumbs up to all his bumper music so far. I mean, I'm amazed because I'm really opinionated about this stuff. Congressman John Campbell filling in for Seth Leibson. The phone number here is 602-508-0960. Again, 602-508-0960 if you want to call in and talk about whatever I'm talking about or whatever you want to talk about. But now I want to give you, I mentioned before that I am a political refugee from California and one of the many Californians moving to the Grand Canyon State of late. I actually moved last year. And one of the reasons, you know, there's a lot of reasons people move. It's amazing how often here I'll go somewhere and I'll talk to someone and I'll say, where are you from? And they'll say, from California. And I'll say, why did you move? Or I'm from Illinois or I'm from wherever. And I'll say, why did you move? And I get various answers. The ones from California often are political, but they're not always that. Some of it is this. I just did what I call a McDonald's test. So I went in Newport Beach, not exactly a lowbrow, you know, cheap area. I understand that. But I went to McDonald's at Newport Beach, and I had my usual McDonald's meal that I have had since, I don't know, the 60s sometime. Yeah, sometime in the 60s, which is a quarter pounder with cheese, but plain. Just meat, cheese, and bun, a medium fries, and milk. Yes, I know milk. I don't drink soft drinks, never liked them. It's not because I'm lefty. I just don't like them. Anyway, so I did that in Newport Beach the other day. And I went in, and I hadn't been to McDonald's in a little while, to be honest, but this was for lunch. $9.45. I was like, $9? I went out, looked at the sign. This is McDonald's, $9? Yeah. Okay, so I decided, you know what? I bet it's a whole lot less in Arizona. So now, I didn't go, you know, into Central Phoenix, or I didn't go, you know, anywhere. I went to Scottsdale. I went to McDonald's in Scottsdale. Did it today, actually, just before I came into the studio. Had my quarter pounder milk and medium fries. $5.93. $9.45 in California and $5.93 in Arizona for the same thing. If it's ever the exact same thing, there's nothing more exact same thing than McDonald's being the exact same thing. Why? Minimum wage, regulation, costs of environmental stuff, costs of land, costs of so many things. California just, and this is something people don't realize, even most people in California don't realize all these regulations, all this stuff, they have a cost. The people who sell stuff have to build that cost in. That's like that's a 50% increase for exactly the same thing. Oh, man, they got problems over there. We do not want those problems on this side of the Colorado River. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to the first hour of the Seth Leibson Show with Congressman John Campbell filling in. But we have two more action-packed hours that you have to hear, including more this next hour about the governor's state of the state yesterday. It's John Campbell. Thanks for listening. We will be back. Don't leave.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.